All right. This is the Happy House Hunters. And tonight we are talking about filling our real estate. We go through the six F's of real estate. So we first talk about how to find it, then how to fund it, how to fix it, how to flip it, then how to fill it. And finally, what is your freedom number in real estate? And so I was just having a chat with one of our members earlier today, and we were just talking about this. He said he can't wait to get to that freedom number so he doesn't have to punch the time clock. Anyway, we're talking about filling tonight. And so in the actual Kathy Binner International Academy, I have a course and it's all about the six F's. And on the filling section, I just want to kind of read you the titles and then we're going to kind of talk about some of these. The first one was five trade secrets for finding good tenants and filling your units. Create a detailed rental application. Take credit checks seriously. Hire some help. Keep the good ones. We all have some good ones we want to keep. Ask a lot of questions. Don't settle. Yep, got to back up here. Hold on. My screen jumped on me. I have to get back to my spot. Six types of problem tenants and how to deal with them. Ooh. Has anybody had any problem tenants? Yeah, I've had a few. Here's a good title. My tenant brought in bugs. What do I do? What to do if your new tenant never actually moves in. We actually had that situation. There is also a section on service dog rental laws, and then there's the whole conclusion to that section, and then there's a way you can kind of test your learning if you kind of want to check on what you've learned through that chapter. But anyway, that is everything in the filling chapter of the six F's of real estate in the actual academy. So again, we go through, there's a whole section on finding and then how we fund it, how we fix it, how we flip it, then how we fill it. And then next month, we're going to talk about the freedom number. So tonight I want to talk about filling. So the first thing that I do, and again, we've already found the real estate, we've already funded it, whether we paid cash or got a loan or whatever we did there. And then we had to fix it. We had to take care of any issues before we could put somebody in there. And then we had to decide, are we going to flip it? Are we going to sell it again and take the profit and do this again? Or are we going to be a buy and hold and we're going to keep it and fill it? And so we've reached that point. We've gone through all those steps. We've decided to buy and hold and we're going to fill it. And so the first thing that I do is when it's nice and fresh, I take pictures. That's the first thing I do. Now, our cameras on our phones, on our smartphones these days, they're better than what some of the pixels on cameras that we spent big bucks on just a few years ago. Our cell phones are incredibly good. So at least take some decent pictures and play around with it. You know, you can, you know, do your lighting and try, you know, you can try it vertical, you can try it horizontal, you can try a wide lens. Some of our phones have that option on the phone app. So anyway, there's all kinds of ways to take pictures, but get some good pictures of your unit right after it, you have it ready to go, right after you've done all the fixing part. And so get those pictures. Then you're going to actually put it out to advertise. And I hear a lot of pros and cons about this, but I like Craigslist because I like the way the Craigslist ad is laid out. I like the fact that you can put your pictures there. You can put your description there. It comes up with a map automatically there on a location. Even if you don't put in the actual house number, it gives a general location on where that unit is. Because I try to enter the conversation in the tenant's head instead of making them enter the conversation in mine. I think if I were looking for a place, what would I want to know? I would want to know the details. I would want to see the pictures, and I would kind of at least want to see what neighborhood it was in, even if I didn't know the exact house. And then I always make a note there if it's already occupied, if it's one where I'm just going from one tenant to another, like they've given me notice they're leaving. I do make a note that it's tenant occupied and not to bother the current tenant. But if it's a new purchase and I'm going to buy and hold it and it's empty and it's fresh and it's ready to go, I actually put the actual address in, because I don't know about you, but I've been known when I'm looking for something to do a little peeking around to see if I'm going to like it or not. And so I put the actual address in, and I realized there's some downsides to that. You know, you always have a certain number of folks that, you know, that are concerned, you know, somebody going to break in, and you're always going to have those concerns. And I think you just have to do your due diligence. And there are some alarm systems that you can use, you know, on vacant properties if in fact it is vacant. So there's some things you can do there. And I kind of keep a closer eye when I know I've got it advertised and people are going to be around. And I also visit the neighbors, and I let the neighbors know, you know, that, hey, if you see some folks around, you know, this is available unit. Because number one, oftentimes they'll have family members that are looking, and they'll be like, oh, really? Really? I know somebody that needs a place. But it also allows them to kind of keep an eye out for your house. If they see something that doesn't look quite right, they're going to call you. And they're going to say, hey, somebody was over there really late, or somebody was messing around. They were over there too long. But for whatever reason, everybody likes to be a little nosy. And that's when it's a good thing when you've got a vacant property. So anyway, once I get it advertised and I get that Craigslist URL, that link, now I can put that out across social media if I wish to. Now, I tried Marketplace a couple of times. Not a fan. Was not my favorite thing on Marketplace. I had so many people. It was so overwhelming. And Marketplace on Facebook has a button automatically. If you put anything on Marketplace, they can just at the click of a button say, is this still available? And so, and I'm guilty. I've looked at Marketplace and I've seen something that I was interested in, and there was a button that said still available. I didn't know when they put it on there. You know, for all I know, what I was looking at maybe has been on Marketplace for a month. I don't know. So I click, you know, is this still available? Well, what I discovered, I try not to do that now that I know how it works. What I discovered is as soon as I upload that Craigslist URL onto Marketplace, it'll populate the ad. You know, it makes it look nice and pretty. And of course, that pops up, is this still available? I'll post it at 9 o'clock in the morning. And by 9:05, I've had 102 people ask, is this still available? And I'm like, oh, I'm overwhelmed. Because then you have to decide, am I going to answer each one of these individually? How am I going to handle this? So I wasn't a huge fan of Marketplace because it was a little overwhelming. And there was no way to kind of vet anyone. There was no way to kind of find out if they were even eligible for the property or not eligible for the property. And so I try to automate as much as possible. So the next thing that I do is I have an application already on my website, and some of the group here, they have their application on a property plot management platform. Mine is actually on my website. And so oftentimes what I'll do at that point is I'll just put out the application. I'll just say, you know, hey, if you're interested, it's still available. And here's the link if you want to apply. And then I set an open house. I do not run every single time somebody wants to see that unit. Like I said, with Marketplace, I would have had 102 people that, is this still available? Can I see it? You know, that was the big question. Is it still available and can I see it? And I'm like, oh my gosh. So when I make that Craigslist ad, I actually create an open house date and time. And I try to make it on a Saturday. I try to start around 2 and run until 4. Now, the reason that I choose a 2 to 4 is, again, if you have rentals, you're going to appeal to a lot of folks that are working. And oftentimes they're working 7 to 3, or they're working 3 to 11. You do have some restaurant workers that have some really odd shifts in there. You have some nurses that are doing 12-hour shifts. So there's all kinds of shifts out there. But if I pick a 2 to 4, I kind of can catch somebody before they have to go in at 3 or somebody that gets off at 3. And so I can kind of catch both ends of a work shift there. And then some folks, if they, you know, if that doesn't work for them, I can always do another showing. If I don't get anyone at that first open house, I can always do a second open house. But lately, one of my favorite things to do is as the applications start coming in. Now, that's the next question is, can you put all the applications in a big pile and then just pick the best one? They recommend not to do that. Some states do not let you do that. In Ohio, there's no law that says you can't do that. But if someone would happen to circle back around and say you've discriminated, it would be awfully hard. Maybe to defend yourself. And the attorneys that I've spoken to recommend that you date and timestamp your applications as they come in. And so now you're going to do two things. You're going to have a list of what your criteria is, and then you're going to start dating and timestamping the applications as they come in. And as soon as the application meets your criteria, that's the person then you would offer the unit to. Because if you wait and get a big pile of 50 applications and then you sort through them and pull out the best one, maybe out of 50, maybe 10 people would totally qualify. But now out of that 10, you don't have any idea who applied first. And so now how do you pick out of that 10? If they all qualify according to your criteria, how do you choose which one of those 10 you're going to give the unit to? Do you choose according to what kind of car they drive or what kind of job they have? They've all qualified income-wise. They've all qualified credit score-wise, if that's one of your criteria. They've all qualified. So how do you choose which one? You know, do you pick the girl in the red dress because you liked her the best? I mean, how do you choose which one? And so that's where you can get yourself into trouble with discrimination laws. And so I started dating and timestamping all of my applications as they come in. And so my only concern when I'm matching them up with my criteria is, does this application match the criteria? And it's either it does or it doesn't. It's either a yes or a no. And so at that point, I just have two stacks and I just start putting this one, I just turn it upside down. That's a no, that's a yes, that's a no, that's a yes. And once I go through the applications, now I've got my stack of yeses. I simply start with the one that came in first that qualified for the unit. And then I'll notify them and let them know that they've been chosen for the unit. And sometimes they'll say, oh, we already signed a lease somewhere. Or they'll say, well, I'm not quite ready. I thought I was, but things have changed. Or so anyway, sometimes you go to the next one or to the third one. I've never had to go past 3 whenever I have a unit out there with an open house. I've always ended up signing a lease within the top 3, the first 3 that have come in that have met all of the criteria. So anyway, back to the advertising, as well as having it on Craigslist and putting it out across social media, you can actually also put it on like apartments.com and some of those other sites. There's some other sites that you can list it. But anyway, so the long and the short of it is once I get it advertised and I do the open house, I generally only have to do one open house. I think a couple of times I did a second showing. But as those applications start coming in and I start saying, oh, this is a yes, this is a yes, this is a yes. Once I get 3 or 4 or 5 yeses, I might contact them before the open house and say, we're doing a private showing, you know, maybe the weekend before. Are you interested? And oftentimes I can have it rented before that general open house even happens. And if that happens, if I can show it early to just that 4 or 5 that have already come in that are qualified, if I can rent it early, I can eliminate a lot of wear and tear on that unit of 50 applicants walking through there. Or I also can get it rented without spending a whole day standing there, you know, showing the unit and waiting for, and then people can't find a place to park. And, you know, and it's just a big deal during an open house. And oftentimes I can rent it early and then just cancel the open house. And what I do at that point is I just put it out across my social media that the open house has been canceled. I make sure that I put it on the Craigslist ad that, you know, the unit has been rented and the open house has been canceled. And at that point, I also put a note on the door in case somebody shows up that day, because maybe they didn't see the social media for whatever reason. So I put a note on the door as well that the unit's been rented and the open house has been canceled. And oftentimes if I can do that, that just eliminates a lot of hassle and a lot of time and a lot of energy and a lot of wear and tear on the unit itself, especially if you've just put in new floors and new carpets and all of that. You really don't need 50 people. Cause my, like, it's always a rainy day on my open house. And then I have to take that extra step of, you know, are we going to ask people to take off their shoes? Are we going to have little booties for them to wear? Are we going to have, you know, a rug they can wipe their feet on? There's always those considerations. And so if I've already rented the house, now I want to be conscientious to that new renter, because now this is their home. See, this is their new carpet. This is their new floors. And so we don't really want all those folks tramping through there if we can avoid it. So anyway, so now I get to that point and I've got the application in writing. Now the person is ready. I've chosen the one that's going to rent it. They've said yes. And so now I do the application. And I was doing a paper application for a lot of years. And just recently, my daughter, Jen, who is also my admin, she put my application into the Inago, which is a property management platform. And she put the application in there for the first time. I'm still doing my background checks manually. I'm using a company called Been Verified. And I also kind of take a look across social media just to kind of see, you know, what kind of personality type. Because again, some of my units are multifamily. So you've got folks, you know, close together. And I do have one fourplex. And this isn't a hard and fast rule, but it seems to have worked out for me so far, is that I try because everybody's kind of packed in the back, where they park and in and out. If I put a guy in a couple of the units, my hope is that I can rent to all guys back there. Or if I put a girl, my hope is that I can rent to all girls. Because my fear is if I have some guys and some girls, that some romance might spark. And then when they have a fight, the fight happens right there because they both live right there. And again, that's just one of my concerns that, you know, I've seen it happen, and you kind of like the fights to be somewhere else and not in your unit. So, but I'm lucky enough that I usually have a lot of single guys that are interested in those little one bedroom units. Oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes the girls come with some kids and the units aren't big enough. So that's why I generally get guys that want to rent there, and that works really well for me. And so anyway, with that, we get the application completed, we get the keys to them, and now they're ready to move in. And once they move in, the first thing that I do is I collect the first month and the deposit, and then that gives me 30 days at that point. And I give them a receipt right there. I'll take either a check or cash. It's up to each landlord has their own system. But at that point, then that gives me 30 days to actually upload their information into an online platform property management company like Inago or Cozy or Buildium. There's all kinds of platforms that are available out there. And then once they're uploaded into that system, see, then the system kind of takes over collecting the rent. It automatically charges the late fees. All of their maintenance requests, if something comes up, comes through Inago. And at that point, I really like Inago because I can simply click on it and forward it right out to my maintenance person, whether it's my HVAC guy or my roofing guy or my plumber or my landscaper, doesn't matter, whatever the maintenance issue is, I can just forward the email right on to my maintenance person. So anyway, that's kind of my system. And from there, less is more. I don't I don't take a lot of phone calls or text messages from my tenants. I have them submit everything through Inago. And because on Inago, their only choices are to pay the rent or file a maintenance request. And that eliminates a lot of the drama, you know, of like her car's in my space, you know, make her move her car. And so, I just don't get down in, as I like to say, I just don't get down in the weeds with my tenants. I try to keep it very professional and somewhat, I'm very friendly. I'm very open, and they can contact me at any time if they have any questions. But I do try to not get involved in a lot of their issues that are personal, that really have nothing to do with me or the unit. Then some of the questions that I get from some of our members is once the tenant is there, now issues come up. They can't pay their rent, or the landlord went by and now there's a pet in the unit and there's not supposed to be any pets, or there's more people living there than what the person had on the application. So then there are all of those issues that need to be solved. And again, I correspond with all of my tenants through the Inago platform. And that way the notice goes directly to them. And even if they email me or text me or call me or whatever they do, oftentimes they'll respond right back through Inago. It gives me a paper trail of everything that's said. And I also keep it short and sweet. I don't get over involved in explaining a situation. I just try to make it a sentence or two, you know, we've been made aware that you have a pet, or we've been made aware that there are more folks, you know, living in your unit than was on your application. And then I just give them their choices. And 100% of the time, I simply repeat the lease agreement back to them in my Inago correspondence. You know, paragraph such and such on page such and such says, and I just repeat the lease back to them. Now, there is a thing called, help me out, guys, is it the petscreening.com? And I started using that, and it's a sweet thing because even if they don't have any pets, they can go into the pet screening and check mark that they don't have any pets. And it's like a third party, and it just pulls a little more weight when someone has completed that and has said they have no pets, because it explains in the pet screening that there are penalties if they do have a pet once they've said they don't have a pet. And so it does kind of eliminate some of that from happening. And so I'm really happy with the pet screening as well. And occasionally I'll make an exception. You know, we have a property out in the country and the gal wants to know if she can keep her dog. And we're like, you know, okay. And so again, she's going to complete the pet screening and she's going to mark that she does have a pet. And so that way we'll have a record and that the pet has had its shots and all of that. Because again, now you're talking a liability issue that could cross back over to you, the landlord, because you own the property where this animal is going to be kept. So anyway, that's my process. At the other end, it's right in my lease. They have to give me a written notice when they're leaving. And in my lease, it also says that I can start to show the unit before they're gone. And oftentimes I'll have the unit actually rented before the previous tenant has ever moved out. I'll already have the applications in. I'll have already chosen someone. I've already offered it to them. They've already accepted. They've already signed a lease. And we're just waiting. I'll try to have maybe a 24 or 48 hour punch out. And I've got my maintenance guy. And I just let him know as soon as I get a move out. Hey, I've got a move out. And they're leaving the end of the month. And I already take the last day of the month and the first day of the next month. I already schedule him. As soon as I get a notice that I have a move out, I schedule my maintenance guy for the last and the first. And that way he knows that his job, while they're finishing going out the door and the new tenant is starting to come in the door, he can get in there and fix anything that needs fixed. And oftentimes it's not a lot, but it's things that need to be looked at. He just needs to make sure that the toilets are working okay and that there's no faucets that are leaking and that, you know, the roof's in pretty good shape and that the heat and cooling systems are still working. He patches some nail holes. All my units are the same color and paint, not only the same color, but the same sheen, the same everything. And my maintenance guy carries around it. I have a gallon. My maintenance guy has a gallon. Mark has a gallon. We all have a gallon of the paint in our car. Each one of us, we carry it. So no matter where we are, you know, and a paintbrush. So no matter where we are, we can whip out our gallon of paint and we can touch up. And so, so I do that all the time. And my maintenance guy, of course, has that color. So he goes in and he'll touch up the nail holes and just tidy anything up. And once I start showing it, you know, as soon as they give me a notice that they're leaving and I start showing it, I'm looking around as I'm showing it. I'm looking to see, does the carpet need replaced or shampooed? Does the cabinets need touched up paint? I'm making my punch out list as I'm showing it to prospective tenants. I'm already mentally making my punch out list for my maintenance guy. And he doesn't do all of the work. I have a carpet company that does my carpet. And then I have a different guy that does all of my steam cleaning. And so I'll have all of that lined up and scheduled. As soon as I get that move out notice, I'll have that scheduled on the last day of the month and I'll have it already ready to go. And so if I miss any rent at all, it's usually a day or two. Very rarely do I go more than 4 days. Very rarely do I have more than 4 days between tenants. Now that's once a unit has been fixed from the beginning. Remember the six F's, you know, I found it, I funded it, I fixed it, and then I filled it. And so now this is one where somebody's moving out and somebody else is moving in. All I have to do is very little maintenance at that point. Because I tell my tenants all the time, if you have anything, tell me, I'll fix it. I don't want a big pile of stuff to fix when they move out. You know, tell me as we go along, if something breaks or something's not working, I want to fix it as we go along so that I don't have a big list when they move out. So anyway, so that's me. I want to go around. I want to turn it over. Okay, Kyle's got his hand up. Kyle, what is your question or comment?
Well, like you said, I know right now in this particular market, it's not hard to find tenants. It's like shooting fish in a barrel. But right. For future information, you actually can also enlist the help of a real estate agent and list your properties on the MLS. There is a rental side to the real estate that a lot of people don't realize.
You know what? That is a great point. And I've used that in the past, but it's been so far and few between since the market has been the way it is that I've even thought about that or needed to do that. But yes, that is an option. So, and am I correct that you might get some inquiries of folks that are coming in maybe from out of town, they don't know the area. So instead of just looking at Craigslist or driving around neighborhoods looking at signs, they would contact a realtor to see what is available. Is that more likely in this market?
Yeah, we do see a lot of that. It's a lot of people who are from out of town, aren't familiar with the area. They want a real estate agent. Hey, put me in a good neighborhood. Here's my budget. And a lot of relocation services too, you know, because there's a lot of scams and stuff on Craigslist.
You know, and that's another point. And I want to talk about that for just a moment. I just had a gal and we've been talking with her about moving into one of our units. The only thing I have right now is the most recent one that we purchased down in Hocking Hills. And we've debated about whether to do that one as a short term or as a long term. And this gal wants it as a long term. And I actually know her personally. She's a hairstylist back from my salon days. And she actually got scammed. She found a property and loved it. And the guy had a sob story. And she fell for it. She said she even felt so sorry for him. And anyway, he took her money. And then when she got there, realized that there were people living in the house and that they never even heard of this guy before. So it was a true scam. And then just recently, I bought a condo that had a long-term renter that came with the deal. She was already living there when I bought it. And she just recently moved out and I decided I wanted to try my hand at midterm rental. And I put that out there on Furnished Finders. And the gal that finally responded to my ad there She said that she didn't get scammed, but the last four units that she looked at were scams. That people were living in them and owned them. And they said, no, that they never had their rent, their unit on Furnish Finders. So somebody had just taken their pictures off of the internet from when they did purchase, and they put it over on Furnish Finders and was collecting deposits. And then there is no such person that owns that unit.
Right, right. Something very similar happened to me on a recent listing. Somebody took the pictures in the description and went and made a Craigslist ad and put it up for rent. And people were calling me and asking me about the rental. And I was like, no, this is for sale. And somebody sent me the link. And there it was. Somebody had made a fake Craigslist ad with my listing advertising as rent and call this foreign number and make your deposit today.
Yeah. So I don't know the answer to that. One of the things that I tell, of course, you know, my tribe is to create an actual website and put your properties on your website and put a name and a face to it so that folks have a way to at least feel a little more confident that you're a real person, because the scammers aren't going to have their name and face anywhere. And it's also not going to be on the auditor site as being an owner of that property. And you can make those prospective tenants feel much better if you have a website, you've got your properties there, you've got something about you there. And even then you can put something in there about don't be scammed, double, and you can kind of teach them tenants a little bit, you know, double check the auditor site, make sure who the owner is, contact the owner of the property if you think it might be a scam. And so those are some things that you can do to make prospective tenants feel more comfortable dealing with you. Any comments on that, Kyle?
Yeah, no, that sounds great. But yeah, you know, I mean, they're everywhere and they're getting more prevalent.
Yes, and it is. It's getting bad. The fact that the last two tenants that I actually signed on, both of them had either been scammed or been involved in trying to avoid a scam. And so, yes, it is. It's really getting bad. So we have to, you know, help the tenants, because we all know there's hardly any inventory out there. And even in rentals, there's just hardly anything available. You know, the gal that I've been talking to about the property down in Hocking Hills, she's been looking, and she can't find anything. So it's been kind of crazy. Tammy and David, let's hear from you. Give me a little bit about your process on what you go through when, and I know a lot of your properties came with tenants. So share with me some tips and tricks for you guys.
So we do have, I think, eight rental units, and we've only had to find three tenants, and all of the rest of them came filled. So our process was, like you said, we started with pictures of the unit and created an ad. I tried to do a Craigslist ad, but for some reason mine kept getting taken down. So I ended up putting mine on Facebook. We got several applicants probably in the week period. And I did not want to do an open house and have a ton of people. So I just called the six people that I had pre-approved. Like, I looked at the court site just to see what their records were to kind of pre-approve them. And then I called all of them and said, I'm going to have a showing tomorrow. Here's the available hours. And then I got all of them to schedule either during their lunch hour or right after work. And they came out and told me if they were interested or not. And if they were, I guess before that point, I had them in my ad. I said, if you're interested, please fill out my free application online. And the link was in the ad. And it took them to my application that's within Inago. We also use the Inago system. They filled out the application, so they already had put their name and email address into Inago for me. And then if they were interested, after they had viewed the property, I sent them a link to have a paid credit check and background check done. And we do that through Inago also. So Inago partners with a third party agency. They do a credit and background check. I just got the results of that that told me, you know, here's the tenant's past history and their credit rating. And we compared it to our list of requirements and chose the first and best candidate, the first person that matched all of our qualifications, and got them to move in.
Now, how long was it between the time that you actually did the background check that you got the results back through Inago?
It was within 24 hours.
Okay. That's a great turnaround time. I'm kind of doing my own. I like you, I look at all of the court records. On the application, it's got three addresses back. And so sometimes I can pick up if they're moving from another county or if they've lived in another county. And so I just do a little sleuthing on my own. Now, my daughter is really good at it. She could probably do some background checks. She could probably create her own company because she's really good at that sleuthing. And so sometimes I'll have her do it if I don't have time. But once I look on the court records and then look at my BIN verified, it usually I catch pretty much everything. I don't know that I've missed anything. But as I get busier, I may very well use the Inago background check as well. Because am I correct? It's free to the landlord. It's the tenant that pays to have the check done.
Correct.
Okay. And so you don't have them do that check until you've chosen them. So that way, not everybody that applies is paying for that. It's just correct. The person that you finally decided this is who you're going to go with.
Correct.
Okay.
So we put our application our application is in Inago. It's free to send out to anyone you wish. And then once I've decided that it's someone worth pursuing and it's worth asking them to put the $35 or $40 up for their background check, then I send them a link to the Inago background check where Inago collects their information and their payment. I never see the information that they put in. I don't see their social security number. I don't see their credit card. It's all on Inago.
Okay. And now, do you guys use the pet screening as well?
We have not. We heard about that after we filled our units.
Okay.
So, and then another person that we got as a tenant was a referral from an existing tenant of ours that we really like. So we had him fill out the application and we did the background check, but we didn't even show that unit to anyone other than him.
Okay. That's when it's really nice.
Yes.
Yeah. Because then you don't have all of that, you know, work and effort and, you know, because whatever you put out there for rent, once you rent it, you've got to go back out and take it all back down. You have to let all those folks know that the unit has been rented. And that's where I got a little overwhelmed with Marketplace. Now, did you say you used Facebook Marketplace on one of yours?
Yes.
Was that overwhelming or no?
No, I mean, it was a little annoying because you just had a million people saying, is this still available? And I just copied a reply that said something along the lines of, yes, it is. If you're interested in it, here's the link. It was in the ad. And then let them go from there.
Okay. Now, once you rented it, did you go back to let them know the unit had been rented? Let me ask you this. The ones that actually did an application, did you let the ones with the application know that your unit has been rented?
Yes, because they had already submitted their application through Inago. And so in Inago, once you choose who you want to rent to and you create a lease for them, then you can send a notice to all of the remaining applicants that said, this unit has been filled. Thanks for your interest.
Ah, and another reason why I need to put my application into Inago instead of using it on my website, because I have to manually copy and paste that this unit has been rented to all of my applicants. So yeah, good point. Inago has made that easier. Yes.
Yes, good point. It was easier. And I found it was easier instead of notifying people like one at a time, just to wait until it was rented. I think you had given us this advice, wait until it was rented and the person paid their deposit. And then in Inago, just send out a form letter, basically email that says, thanks for your interest. This unit has been rented.
Okay. Very good. Very good. I love it. Okay. So now they're all filled. How do you handle maintenance requests at this point?
We use Inago to collect the deposit, the rent, any late fees, any pet fees, and to collect maintenance requests. We're still trying to train some people to use Inago for their maintenance requests regularly.
I get it.
We have some that are good at it and others who would rather go directly to the source. So we're working on it.
I get it. One of the phrases that I started using when I would get a text message or a voicemail that had a maintenance request, I would then get in touch with them and I would say, thank you so much for your maintenance request, and I will submit this through Inago for you so that it goes directly to our maintenance team. And then they were like, oh, should I be doing that? And I'm like, well, it goes directly to the maintenance team that way. And they were like, okay. And so that's kind of how I got my folks to finally use the Inago. Now, when I have a new tenant, I explain it to them right up front and it's not an issue. It's mm-hmm. the ones that I had before I switched over to Inago and there was a process there of getting them rolled over, you know, because nobody likes change, you know. And so there was a little bit of a process as I was getting everybody rolled over there.
So and I think one thing that I do differently, I know that you have a recording of your ad so that people in your ad, you know, they can call this number and it basically tells them about the unit. Mm-hmm. And I chose to just go online. So all of our ads say, go to this website, and it basically is the same ad all over again, sometimes with bigger or more pictures because it takes them to our website.
Okay.
But we also had yard signs printed up that just have our web address on them and don't have a phone number that takes people directly to our listings.
Now, that's a good point too. Mine do have a phone number, but what I do on my phone number, and again, this is kind of a sweet little thing if you're using a phone number still on your ads, is that I go into my phone, my cell phone, because it's a second line on my cell phone to begin with. And I go into that second line on my cell phone and I create what's called a vacation greeting. And if you're not familiar with that, a vacation greeting, when you go in to record your actual greeting, you know, hello, you've reached whatever number, the vacation greeting simply says, I am away from the phone, I'm on vacation, I'll be back on such and such a date. And if there's an emergency, here's a number to call. And the difference between your regular greeting and your vacation greeting is that the folks cannot leave a voicemail on the vacation greeting. They can't leave you a message. It's just kind of an announcement that you're gone and that they have to call someone else if there's an emergency. So I thought about that and I thought that would be a great place to simply read my ad, my Craigslist ad, right in as the greeting and announce the open house. And I wouldn't have a bunch of voicemails to follow up on because the vacation greeting doesn't allow them to leave a voicemail. And so what I did is after I created my Craigslist ad, I could actually go right into my cell phone on that second number. And it said, do you want to record a vacation greeting? And I hit the button. Yes, I did. And then, you know, at the beep, record your greeting. And I just read my Craigslist ad right into the greeting. You know, this is the address. This is the open house. This is, you know, 3-bedroom, 2-bath. You know, I just read down through the Craigslist ad. And so that way, if anybody did see the sign as they drove by and called the number, they would get the same information that the folks received that saw it on Craigslist or that saw it on Facebook Marketplace or apartments.com. And like you guys, my ad's the same everywhere. And so that worked well for me and I didn't have to chase all of those voicemails. I still was chasing the marketplace. Is this still available though? And I didn't use it the next time, by the way. I only used the marketplace, I think two times, and then I didn't use it, and I got an okay result without using it. So, and it was not near as much work. So I get it. Okay, so now the folks are in there. What happens when somebody is going to move on? Have you had anyone yet that has given notice that they're leaving?
We have not. So we haven't had to do any turnovers of a unit yet. We are expecting that we will get some this year.
Okay. So
we have a couple of tenants who have let us know that they're thinking about buying their own place. So they want to, you know, go from renter to owner, you know, so we said, so we absolutely support you in that. That's a great thing. Hey, we've got a wonderful realtor if you don't have one lined up already.
Perfect. 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 Now, my question is it written into your lease that you can start showing it as soon as you get a notice? Let's say somebody gives you a notice here in May that says, you know, by the end of June, I'm going to be moving.
I don't think we do have that in there. And frankly, through this first go around, I'm not sure that I would want to do it. Anyway, I love what you're saying about, you know, you never have more than just 4 days of downtime. But since I haven't had any apartment turnover yet, I really want to kind of get in there and kind of go through the units.
And some of yours, the tenants actually came with the purchase. So you've actually never gotten into those units at the beginning. That's the way I was with my last girl at the condo. She came with the purchase. And so I'd been inside her unit a couple of times, but I hadn't looked like under the sink and in the kitchen and in the bathroom, right, under the vanity. I had, you know how sometimes under the sink and under the vanity, there's been a drain leak and nobody told you, and the whole bottom of the cabinet's soft and rotted. I didn't have any idea what I was going to find.
Sure.
Now, I was lucky because she was a neatnik, and obviously, you know, if there were any issues, she took care of it or called or whatever, because everything was perfect. And she actually moved out at 4 o'clock on a Saturday, and my new girl moved in at 3 o'clock on Sunday.
Wow.
So I went from 4 o'clock Saturday night to 3 o'clock Sunday afternoon.
Well, we would love to get to that point, but I think we'll do a little more of a slow turn here this first go around.
I get it. I get it. Yep. I understand that. Well, great, guys. Now, tell us again a little bit about you. How many units do you have, and how long have you been doing this, Tammy and David?
So we've been doing it since September of 2020.
Okay.
So it's, I guess, a little over a year and a half now. We have a total of 9 rentable units. One of them is a large storage unit. It is fully rented. It's our easiest thing. It pays $750 a month, and I never I can't not look at it because it's monstrous, but I never have to do any maintenance. I don't get any calls. Just every month a check shows up. I love it.
Yep, that's a good one.
And then we are actually inhabiting one of the rentable units. So we have 8 rented units, one's a storage unit, total of 7 tenants.
Okay. I personally have been at this since I bought my first one investment property. I'd owned my own home before, and I'd owned my own condo that I lived in before, but my first investment property was in 2002. And so I've been doing it since 2002. I got up to 30 doors, but the last 4 were total rehabs. And Mark finally cried uncle. You guys know my story. And he decided it was way too much. And he just didn't feel like he wanted to do that much work because they were total. I mean, we're talking down to the studs total. And so we did sell those. We did sell the last 4. So anyway, so now, I still have, the 26, and that is quite comfortable for me. I don't know that I want to add any more. Everything's just pretty comfortable right now. But again, I wouldn't Kyle, I know you're listening. I wouldn't let a good deal go by. And for those that are listening in on the call, I'm going to go over to Adrian here in a moment. But for those that are listening in on the call, we are doing our Happy House Hunters Mastermind Boots on the Ground tomorrow night. And Kyle has a great property lined up for us to see in Lancaster. And it is a multi-unit. And we're going to take a look at that. And then for those of you that are listening in, may remember that Stephanie Jenkins was my partner in the Happy House Hunters, and we lost her a little over a year ago, and we now have a scholarship in her name, and we gave out two scholarships last year on her birthday, and this year, tomorrow night, we are actually giving out a scholarship again in her name tomorrow night. For a gal that's interested in becoming an actual licensed realtor. And so the scholarship is for her education piece of it, of her getting licensed. So anyway, that's what we're doing as a group. So we want to invite everybody to join the mastermind if you'd like. And don't forget that the course is in the Kathy Benner International Academy. I read through some titles just in the filling section. There's a chapter for each F of the six Fs. And in the mastermind group, we have a resource center. So I want to talk about that for just a moment. I added probably three or four more names into the resource center today. And those are folks that we've all used, that we call on in the Central Ohio area when we need someone, whether it be a roofing person or a plumbing person or foundation repair, mowing, landscaping. It's everything, whatever comes up, we ask our members to send it over to me and I put it in the resource, because that's the toughest thing right now is finding someone to do some of this work when you do have a maintenance issue or when you do buy a new property and you're all the way back at the fixing stage. You know, you found it, you funded it, and now you got to fix it before you can either flip it or fill it. And so finding those fixers is the problem. So anyhow, I want to talk about that for just a moment. Tammy and David, how are you finding the resource center? Is it working for you? Have you found some good resources there? I know you've added some good ones there, some folks that you're using, you've added there, but are you finding some good ones there as well?
Yes. Definitely found our plumber there, and we absolutely love Pipeworks. So wish they had better coverage up into Columbus.
Yes.
Because, yeah, they've been phenomenal for us. I feel like we use them also for
another emergency plumber and for something else. I can't remember.
What is the other thing?
But then we've also just found other people through word of mouth from other groups that we belong to.
Yes, and thank you for then forwarding those on to me that I could put them in our resource center, because again, especially for the newbies, if we've got some new investors, that's probably the toughest piece is when you've got a property out there that needs a roof repair or foundation or plumbing or drywall or paint or masonry work. It doesn't matter, whatever it is, right down to appliance repair. I was able to find an appliance repair person out of our resource center, and it worked really well for me. Instead of having to buy a whole new refrigerator, I just got it fixed. And so again, that it just went a lot faster. I didn't, because again, inventory. I mean, I couldn't buy dishwashers for a while. There was none in stock anywhere. And I went to the resource center and found an appliance repair and they fixed a dishwasher for me. And so I didn't have to replace it. I didn't have to find one after all. So anyway, all of that's huge. So thank you for contributing to the resource center. Adrian, can you hear us? Are you with us there? We don't see your picture. We just see your logo there. There he is. Yeah. Hi.
Hi. How you doing?
Good. Okay. All right. So you've been listening for a while. So tell us a little bit about you and how you got started in actually doing the buy and hold, because you have your first unit. So tell us about that.
How did it all start? Or
yeah, how'd you get started?
Oh, okay. Just wanted a better life, so I just figure out what I wanted to do. So I was interested in real estate before. I was trying to get a license when I was living in New York, but I couldn't, I wasn't able to get that done. So I decided to move out here I decided to give it another chance. So I just researched what I should do to move forward. I heard investing, I haven't done much training and things like that. So I've done that. And I pursue that harder. So once I pursue that harder, do all my research, they said it's very important to get a mentor. So I decided to look for mentors around. And I was going to a lot of open houses. I'm trying to meet other investors. So then that's when I met you. And you introduced me to Stephanie. And after that, I was looking for houses. And you're helping you and Stephanie. I was able to get this small little house that I was able to afford, and I use it with my stimulus check and as a down payment and with the loan. So I had it for that was like at least a 6 month span, because I started late 2019. And once I did that, I rehabbed the home for almost about between over and under 5,000 for over a year and so. And after that, I have a couple months, about 3 or 4 months, I was screening tenants, and I was able to find one at the time. It has ups and downs, but then it was at the point now. It was her first home. I got the impression it went over her head, so she wants to move out. So I didn't blah. So I'm at this point next month. I'm just waiting for her to move out and just start the process over again.
Well, and again, that's what it's all about. Once you get it into a system, then again, it'll just be the process, because mm-hmm. we're all going to have move outs. And we're all going to have move-ins. We're all going to have, issues where at some point something changes for a tenant and they either need to move on, or they have to move on, or they can't pay the rent, or they've got a job transfer, or they now have children and the unit's not big enough. There's all kinds of issues. And so, again, that's just part of the process. So we're very proud of you, Adrian. We're glad that you are a part of the tribe and that you have your first rental property. So congratulations on that. Is there any final comments? We're at the top of the hour. Is there any final comments or questions or concerns that you want to bring up before we go today? Kyle, do you have anything for us? Maybe you can tell us a little bit about our boots on the ground tomorrow night.
It's an up-down duplex. The lower unit is rented. The guy has been there for a few years. He's on the VA, so the VA is paying his rent, so it's guaranteed income there. The upstairs unit is unfinished, is what the other agent says, so it needs a little bit of rehab work. But it is a good opportunity in downtown Lancaster to get a duplex cash flowing with very, very cheap property taxes.
Yes. The property taxes are very good there. I looked up the purchase price on this one. It sounds pretty good. How much of a rehab is the upstairs?
I'm not sure, because there are no pictures posted online.
Okay.
And he said, of course, it's going to be up to the new landlord. You know, everyone's got their own opinions as to what needs done and what kind of quality they want to offer, or what kind of rent they want to net.
Well, I'm excited. I can't wait to see it, because this one is right in my neck of the woods. I own a rental on the 600 block of East Wheeling Street in Lancaster, and this one is on the 700 block. So it's just a block past where I already have a house. So I'm excited. I can't wait to see it. And then don't forget, tomorrow night after our boots on the ground, we are going to get together at the Mexican restaurant there at the mall, right there on Memorial Drive. There is a Mexican restaurant. It's real close to, I think it's real close to the Red Lobster.
Piscata, right beside Red Lobster.
Yeah, it's right beside Red Lobster there in Lancaster. Anyhow, we're going to go there by 7 o'clock tomorrow night. And we get to meet our recipient for the Stephanie Myla Jenkins Initiative Scholarship. And we get to meet her and actually give her the scholarship tomorrow night. So I'm excited about that. So any last comments, Tammy and David? Adrian, anything from you?
No, nothing. I'm just grateful to be part of the group.
Yes, yes, we're glad you're here. All right, I am Kathy. Again, this is the Happy House Hunters. We talked tonight about filling. You can find all of the information at kathybinner.com. Just scroll down the homepage, you'll see the Happy House Hunters. It's the free meetups, all of our replays are there, the course is there, the mastermind is there. Everything is at kathybinner.com. So check us out and we will see you next week. Talk to you later. Bye.